Welcome to Understory, this 30th of January 2019. I'm Elizabeth Poe. What is it about caring for the planet that's so difficult? Like me, you may want to see a vibrant, healthy world recovering from the disasters brought by human industrialization. Maybe like me, you are regularly devastated by the awfulness of species decline and ecosystems collapse. Today on Understory, the most ancient of tales comes to our ears as a bridge between what we most desire to create on this planet and how things really are. We're entering a virtual exhibition of the mind today, one we may be able to visit in the real world sometime, but today we encounter memories of holograms of elders, marvel at the sky of our central desert, listen to the elders' voices singing the song line of the Seven Sisters.
The song lines are the foundational, the Seven Sisters and others of the creation variety are the foundational stories of this country. They're central. This is how this country was formed. This is the true story. They're ancient, and if you want to call yourself Australian, live in Australia, then you need to know your stories beyond the last 220 years. Otherwise, you'll never take root, you'll never belong, and so we're here to teach you your stories. So it's not, we're lovely, a bunch of lovely people with a whole lot of stories that have got nothing to do with you, but, you know, we're happy to share them, not that. These are your stories, we're here to teach them to you.
Across the world, there are stories about the six bright stars of the Pleiades and the seventh sister, so hard to see, who disappears from view and yet somehow we glimpse her now and then. Aboriginal people across Australia, too, have the story of Seven Sisters. It's an important one that's been told and retold for so many generations. Those who cared for and passed on the story for generations are as much a part of the curatorial team for this exhibition as those on the ground. This significant exhibition was at the National Museum in Canberra in 2018.
I'm Margot Neal. I'm the Senior Indigenous Curator and Advisor to the Director of the National Museum of Australia. I'm of Aboriginal Irish descent from Kulin Nation with Goombanga and Wiradjuri clan connections.
So can you talk about the song line that I think starts from Roebourne and spreads towards Central Australia? What's that all about?
Well, the song line, the one that we dealt with in this show, is called Seven Sisters, which relates to the Orion and Pleiades. So what's interesting about that is that Orion and Pleiades evidently are visible to both the northern and southern hemispheres, so it's not surprising then that the Seven Sisters story is in Ireland and Japan and Africa and everywhere. It's across the entire world, and it's almost invariably the same template. Some fella, wrong way, chasing a bunch of women, and all of the encounters and events along the way are what created the country or other features and set up the mores and behaviours. But someone did tell me the other day that they think the Inuit one, it's the other way around, the women are chasing the men, so that's yet to be explored. In this case, all the Aboriginal people we dealt with along the way and agreed, now you and I know that's quite extraordinary, there was no disagreement that the Seven Sisters story started in Roebourne. Now, Lepuk Island is what people used to say, but it's the same area, Lepuk and Roebourne. So they moved, the story moves from the west coast to the east coast in that kind of movement, but not a continuous... linear movement. You know, it fragments and goes, turns and goes back on itself, as you would have seen in the exhibition. Sometimes it circles and there's all sorts of ways, but even more than that, it also goes to the north and the south and crisscrosses the continent. But the general movement evidently is from that source across to the east.
It's quite extraordinary that this story should be both a European one and a Aboriginal one, and, you know, as you say, in all these different parts of the world. Can you explain why these stories seem to be about seven sisters and one hunter and the seventh sister's the one that might get taken because that star's a bit harder to see. Have you got any feeling for it, having worked on the exhibition, why it seems to be such a universal story?
Well, yeah, I think the universality of the story, not the fact that it exists all around the world. We know, as I've just said, that it does exist all around the world. I think it's got to do with if you're a culture, that non-text-based society, that is an oral tradition society, and you want people to pass this story down for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years, you better make it saucy. You know, you've got to make it human. You've got to give it human values, you know. And the whole Adam and Eve, you know, all of the major stories will have that male-female gender relations thing. And so it's pretty basic that you'd have a story involving that, and that you'd have a story that involved a chase in order for the story to travel and incorporate groups and explain different terrains. And it makes sense that you'd have the chase would be based on the fact that there was something wrong, that the bloke shouldn't be chasing those women, and then you'd learn about the rules, you'd learn about the protocols and rules around kinship, around marriage, around appropriate sorts of behaviours. So, you know, it's, you could, and you look, you know, when I have 3 and 4 year olds in there, people say, oh, should we take our kids, you know, it's a bit sexual. And I said, well, actually, it's not sexual, really. It's just little girls and little boys know about being chased in the playground. It's just, it starts then, you know, you got. However, you'll have, you know, little boys chasing little girls or vice versa, but usually boys chasing girls for whatever reason. And I always say, well, you know, these little boys chasing these girls and the girls didn't know who they were. They'd be worried about this little boy chasing them. They didn't know him. He was a stranger. And he, oh, but all he wanted to do was play with them. But they were a bit scared, so they kept running. And, you know, so you can translate it. It's a, you know, universal, multi-level. So you could translate it at whatever level you like, and that's the other magic of these stories. It's clear it's not only about men, women, sexual relations, it's also about you know, universal truths. You know, I always say one of them makes me think of is sort of like the invaders or the settlers, whatever word you want, coming to Australia, who in their attempts to possessed that which they most desired, which was the land, they did so by destroying it. So it's the same thing, you're possessing that, trying to, you know, possess that which you most desire, you risk destroying it.
If you want to call yourself Australian and live in Australia, you need to know the stories that go back past 200 years ago, the ancient stories. This is the inclusive message of the Indigenous curator at the National Museum, Margot Neal. Songlines have been described by Noel Pearson as Australia's Iliad and Odyssey, or perhaps its Book of Genesis. So huge are their scale and cultural importance, they are manifestations of the deep relationship between country, culture and cosmology. This exhibition, called Songlines, Tracking the Seven Sisters, tracks across a vast territory from Australia's west through its centre, and the story is one similar to others told in many countries around the world. Margot Neal spoke to Understory at the National Museum in Canberra.
What did you personally learn by doing this exhibition, by being involved? What came through for you that mightn't have been as strong before all the people came together to make this story live?
Oh, with that question, the universality, it's a human story. It's about humankind before anything. So it's what connects all. I think it's about what connects all humans to each other, regardless of culture, race, age, civilization, time period. So I think that's what you learn about. There's this universality about human beings that becomes culturally specific based on the local environment, whether it's political or cultural or environmental. So it's no doubt it is. This is when you realise that, you know, at the bottom of the rung where everyone's pecking at each other because we're different, you see how absolutely futile it is when you look at the big truths which encapsulate all of us.
You're listening to the Indigenous curator at Australia's National Museum, Margot Neal, speaking with Understory's Adrienne Glamorgan about the celebrated major exhibition, Songlines, Tracking the Seven Sisters, and the importance of songlines in all our cultural perceptions.
When Bruce Chatwin published Songlines, yeah, it was gobsmacking for people, maybe white fellows who were involved with, you know, concern about how Aboriginal people were being treated, mm-hmm, to have not heard about that before. But in walks Bruce Chatwin. He's here for 6 months and he writes this book that seems to, you know, pull a veil away from what was covered. Can you explain how that understanding of songlines was hidden for so long, or why it needed to be hidden for so long?
Well, no, I don't think it was hidden. It would take a journalist, someone from outside which has a clarity of view, not previously there's anthros and ethnographers who are there for different reasons. So the distance in both time and space and profession meant, and he was trying to, and don't forget his whole work was based on nomads of the world, so the universality aspect he had as well. Flew in for, I think it was 8 or 9 weeks. So it and in his attempts to understand this journeying of people, which was in fact his interest, Patagonia and such books, he could see the links. He could see the connectivity. He could see the fact that it's an oral tradition that passes in this way, or it's a knowledge system. Now, the thing is, the word and song was obviously a big one, you know. But song means more than just singing. It means the whole performance, right? Not just song. So a lot of the critics of Bruce Chatwin would say, oh, but it's not only song, but it's not only line. Well, no, of course it's not only song, it's not only line. And a line anyway is a journey between two points. It doesn't even have to be straight, which is what the critics said. And I don't know, the critics, I reckon, are just critical because they hadn't thought of it, and they've been hanging around the desert with Australian Aboriginal people for, you know, decades studying, and they didn't come up with a clincher. But then again, they're only talking to each other, so they don't have to, you know, have a term that's going to be understandable by a broader readership. So, and in the process of this exhibition, I was, you know, I had the odd round table or two to gather views on songlines. And, you know, the academics invariably would have a big issue with it as they analytically broke down each word without getting the fact that it's a concept that's very broadly encompassing. And after the end of our round table where everyone had something to say, I would say, look, you know, one said, you really shouldn't use songlines, we really should use a different word. And I said, mate, you try and tell the blackfellas we're working with, it's not their word. It's as good as a language word now. I think you better get off that high horse because you're on your own. It belongs to Aboriginal people just like dreamings belongs to Aboriginal people.
When we look at a map of Australia and we drive across the continent or try and do the Gun Barrel Highway, we're aware of the roads that have been built there. But where we come from, say near Perth, where the Perth Railway Station is, apparently, you know, Daisy Bates wrote there was an ochre bed that was connected to Central Australia. Would you like to see more Australians imagining these connections across country that are more than just the roads that we have?
Yeah, well, that's why you have to do exhibitions like Songlines. And exhibitions probably more than books, you know, exhibitions or documentaries or those sorts of popular things, because actually going back to your previous question, the word song cycles and, you know, those words were used in the literature, and even songlines goes, there's even an evidence as the word songlines, but it's in locked up in academic literature, you know, it's not that aside. Now, if this exhibition, we're in a moment, right? This exhibition, Songlines, would grab the imagination now because it also lives in the same moment that Bill Gammage's book on the biggest state on earth, or Bruce Pascoe's Dark Emu, or Kim Scott's, you know, there's a lot of stuff in the stratosphere at the moment that's re-looking at the way people imagine this continent to be. So when you talk about roads and trains and so on, Well, if you talk to many people, including Bill Gammage, then they followed songlines because, of course, you're going to build roads and cities exactly where Aboriginal people had already, as human beings, found it comfortable to live and comfortable to travel from place to place. So, in fact, his book, as you know, is called The Biggest Estate on Earth, How Aborigines Made Australia. And he will argue that all the cities and all the roads and all the pathways were all made by Aboriginal people, already decided. So, you know, it's a, and then if just that idea is presented to a wider Australia, then it's an aha moment. You know, it's aha. Well, of course. How else? Of course you're going to be near the water sources. Of course you're going to be where the land is most productive, and so on.
You can see the Seven Sisters songline as a story of an ancient culture. Yet it connected across the continent, binding together different Aboriginal nations and resonating across recurrent features in the landscape. Hidden within this telling may be something of greater mystery, as much about our current landscape and natural resource management as an extraordinary retelling of a story that seems to have found expression across many global cultures. If we can listen well enough to the story and the landscape, there may be essential mysteries revealed. You've been listening to Understory with me, Elizabeth Poe, and reporter Adrienne Glamorgan speaking with Margot Neal, who is the Indigenous curator from the Canberra-based Australia National Museum. This and past programs are available online, and we hope you can tune in same time, same planet next week, when there'll be more to explore on Understory.